This is the Huddle.
This is not just. This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to two. The Huddle.
As long as the Seahawks are in the playoffs and alive in 2019, we are here and we're doing the Huddle. We're going to catch up with Luke Wilson coming up at 1 o'clock, John Boyle at 12:15. We're going to be hearing from DK Metcalf doing press conferences now, and rightfully so. But first, Dave Wyman, going back to last week, we got another 17-9 game out of the Philadelphia Eagles. What was your biggest takeaway from the game?
I guess during the game, it didn't feel great because I felt like, you know, you knew that they had all of these fill-ins at their specialized positions, you know, none of the receivers. And, you know, they had, and that's why I thought they ran a lot of cover two. So two deep, five underneath, because you've got, you know, these, they don't have any receivers. They didn't have a receiver that Carson Wentz had thrown to for more than 500 yards. And then, you know, you had guys like Boston Scott who were off the scrap heap, which I just so appreciate players like that. First of all, the guy's 5'6". Second of all, he didn't even get a scholarship. He walked on and then earned a scholarship at Louisiana Tech. And then they got him off of the scrap heap. It was off of, I think, New Orleans practice squad.
And so his name is Boston. I mean, you can't beat that for a scrap heap guy.
They also had a guy named Dallas on their team, too.
Dallas Goedert.
Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, there were those kind of, you like that one, Stacey. That
I did. I laughed at it.
It's a fun fact.
I love fun facts. I love bad jokes, and I love puns.
There you go. But, you know, it just felt like they were getting lots of yards on the defense, and you're like, man, there's a 40-year-old, you know, backup quarterback in McCown who's running for 11 yards and a first down. What's going on here? But then at the end of the day, they gave up 9 points, and they held them to under 300 yards. So I think there was two teams that held during the regular season opponents under 300, and it was New England and San Francisco. So, you know, any time that you do that in the playoffs, you're going to win. So the other thing that came out of that was at the end of the day, I looked, did my little calculation, 95.5% of the offense was Russell Wilson. Normally, I would think, okay, we got a problem here. During the regular season, it's like we got to get something from somebody else. He can't be that big a part of the offense, but we're in the playoffs. I say roll with it. Let's go 96-97% all Russell Wilson, whatever it takes, man.
It doesn't have to be totally sustainable. You need it for
three games. Exactly. Right. It's exactly well put. So, yeah, that's – and I'm hoping that they're going to get – and I think they are going to get a little bit more out of the running game. I think, Stacey, you pointed this out earlier in the week. What are they, number 20, 24 against the run?
Green Bay, yeah. They were allowing about 120 per game.
Now, this is not the same running game that the Seahawks have. You can't say, okay, they were the number three or four at the end of the season because, you know, you're down three running backs. But, you know, I feel like Marshawn is going to, with check downs and the way he's almost getting to the, like the second level, and if he can get to the second level, he can get to the third level. You saw him stiff arm Malcolm Jenkins. I feel like he can get maybe close to 100 yards of offense. I just feel like that's coming from him. I feel like he's capable of it, and maybe that's putting too much on a guy who's been out of the league for a year and a half, but you know, I feel like he's gotten kind of a glimpse of what it's like on the outside, and now he really appreciates it, and he's working hard. And so if they can do that, but I mean, to me, the whole thing is going to have to be about takeaways. They haven't had a takeaway in 3 weeks, and if you're going to win on the road against a 13-win team, you got to take the ball away.
And that's a different in strategy when you get into these situations where I think for the Eagles and for most fans, as you're watching the Seahawks approach versus Philly, it was frustrating to see them march up and down the field because of what you knew was depleted for them. All the skill position guys, everything that you pointed out, Dave. But for them, they have a different approach. Instead of saying, hey, we are going to be aggressive, we're going to be the enforcers because we're just simply more talented than you, we're going to play that conservative game. Yep. We're going to force you to make the mistakes, and it's worked out for them very well. You can't really deny that with how well they've been able to turn the ball over. Stacey, I think it was yesterday, you said they were fourth. They finished fourth in the league in turnovers. And so that philosophy has worked for them. I do think that they can get more aggressive at times, but it's worked. And so you have to tip the cap to Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. in that aspect. And it just makes you wonder what is going to be the strategy against Aaron Rodgers, because if you let him sit back there and you play that two deep coverage and play soft, you don't know if it can be sustainable. So it's definitely something that they're going to have to really decide what they're going to do and what they're going to commit to.
Yeah, it's funny. You look at it's a great job by Pete and Kenny of kind of knowing what they have. You know, and like the sack thing, and they end up getting seven, but you're just not going to get sacks if you're not pinning your ears back and going and rushing the quarterback. They've been very, I don't want to say passive, but they're not, you know, they're not getting after it. They're not taking a lot of chances. They're just trying to keep everything in front of them, and it's one of the reasons why Bobby has a million tackles. So you're just not going to get sacks because you're not turning your linemen loose and you're not playing tough press coverage at the line of scrimmage. You're kind of laying back in zones. Yes, there's completions over the middle, but you make tackles. You make them go the long field. And up until 3 weeks ago, they were taking the ball away. And that's the one thing that concerns me is the lack of takeaways.
Well, and the Aaron Rodgers has four interceptions this year. Yeah. So that's going to be tough in itself.
He's got six the last two seasons. Six interceptions.
Which is pretty crazy.
It is. I admire that stat for a quarterback.
Yeah.
As much as he throws it, to not be making those mistakes.
No, 26 touchdowns to four interceptions this year.
Yeah. So, yeah, that, you know, he is definitely. But they've got a running game, too, with Aaron
Jones.
I keep wanting to call him Rodgers, but yeah, and then they've got a good Davante Adams, you know, who's good, but I just feel like they're a beatable team. But the Seahawks are going to have to play really well, and mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to take the ball away.
How impressed are you that Jadeveon Clowney played the way he did with his current health status? I mean, he's got that core injury.
Yeah.
And I mean, just for him to go out and have the type of game he had last week, pretty impressive.
I don't know what a core injury is.
It could be anything.
We just didn't have them back then, Tom. Back in the day, we didn't have core injuries. I don't even know what that is. They're talking about a hernia, sports hernia, everything, but I know he's in pain and that he's playing through it, and I admire him for that. I love that. But, you know, it is tough to go out there. I remember we had a linebacker named Bruce Schultz who had to get his big toe shot up before every game and at halftime. And I remember,
what was wrong with his toe?
He had turf toe. And turf toe,
which is one of the worst named things you could possibly have, because it doesn't sound nearly as bad as it is.
That's true.
Had turf toe. It happened in a playoff game in which we lost. I don't know if I could have played. I would have gotten shot up, because just the weight of the sheet in my bed on my toe made it like light up like a Christmas tree. It was so painful. But he did that every game, you know, and, you know, he had to go through that, and having to play with pain, it takes up a lot of your thought process.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're not just prepping for the game. You're not just looking at what they run on this down and distance and everything. A big part of your brain is in the back of your mind thinking about how much it hurts. And then sometimes, remember Nelson Cruz had that, I think he had something with his finger, and he knew every time he made contact with the ball, it was going to hurt like hell. And yet he played through that. So I admire guys like that, and Jadeveon Clowney, and everybody trying to call him a criminal for that hit that he had. It's just so ridiculous.
I was thinking about you during that, because I thought of, I don't remember who it was. It was a Steelers player last year. And after that Pittsburgh game, you said, I actually feel really bad for him, because I remember being on the other end of someone accusing me of laying a dirty hit, and that feeling of feeling, and this was actually funny, that you're not in the Matrix. You can't suddenly slow your body down.
And
I couldn't stop thinking about that all week. And every time I would be interviewed about it, I would mention you having said that, because it's what it made me think of. He doesn't have a reputation of being a dirty player.
No.
Sometimes things just look worse than they are.
Well, especially in super slow motion. You know, they should stop. If I was the NFL, when I signed my contract with NBC, Fox, whatever, no more super slow motion, okay? The plan is you make these guys look so bad. Every person, if they played football, every person, man, woman, would have one of those hits. Because everything happens so fast out there that, you know, you can't, like you said, stop and just all of a sudden. And he wasn't trying. It was about intent. He was trying to tackle him. And he was trying to hit him with his shoulder. Well, I measured the other night, by the way. Your head's like 8 to 10 inches away from your shoulder. So unless it's up your tailpipe. And so, which mine is a lot of times during the radio show. But, man, it's just ridiculous that they ask what they're asking these guys to do. And that really bothered me. I mean, that, and here's the other weird thing about that. Carson Wentz went out and had 5 plays after this where you saw it, Jake. On one play, he went through all 5 receivers, the pattern progression. How do you do that with a concussion that's so brutal after that brutal hit, supposedly?
Well, either way, no offensive lineman, with the exception of
not only
maybe
that,
one, said anything in the moment.
Not only that, he checked at the line of scrimmage audible to a play.
Yeah.
He changed protection. He completed a couple of passes. He carried out play fakes, everything. So, you know, I don't know what caused his concussion, but it's not a given that that was 100% on Clowney. So, anyway, he was just trying to make a play at that
And he didn't
point.
Give himself up either on the play, Wentz.
Yeah, he was diving, right. And he was a running back.
Yeah,
I mean,
he was
a ball
carrier.
Ball. Right.
Sure, exactly. We're going to be joined next by John Boyle of Seahawks.com coming up on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Back here on The Huddle, joined by John Boyle of Seahawks.com. And we were talking last segment, John. It doesn't really matter what's sustainable going forward because we've only got a couple of games at maximum, right? So this running game right now, do you think that they'll be able to get, I guess, as much as they need going forward out of both Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer?
I think the key phrase there is as much as they need. Do I think they're going to get a Chris Carson 120-yard, two-touchdown game out of those guys? Probably not. But as we saw last week, Russell Wilson is good enough to win a game almost by himself with his receivers. They don't want to have to play that way every week, but if they can get, you know, something similar to what they had out of Homer a couple weeks ago when he got 60 yards, now that Marshawn's playing more, maybe you get 40, 50 yards out of him. That's enough for this offense.
Yeah, let me ask you about Marshawn. So earlier in the week, you'll like this, Stacey. I compared it to It's a Wonderful Life. Remember, have you seen It's a Wonderful Life?
I've heard of it. It's
okay.
A Christmas movie that's
he gets Jimmy Stewart.
It might
a,
even be older than Wyman.
Oh, God, yeah.
It is.
It is, like from the 40s. But he gets a glimpse of what life would be like if certain things happen. And I felt like he got a glimpse of what it was like to not be a football player anymore. It was tough for me. I mean, you're all of a sudden on the outside, and you don't realize how much fun it is and what a great gig it is. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's come back with a different kind of attitude than he's had in the past.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to sit down and have a deep conversation with Marshawn Lynch now, just like I didn't back then, because that's not really how he interacts with the people who cover the team. But to your point, he does just seem looser and happier, and you can tell he's really just soaking this all in, knowing, look, this could be it for him, but this is a heck of a way to go out. And it's a great look. Most players don't have the talent and opportunity to take time off and just jump onto a playoff team. But when you can do that, that's a pretty good win-win situation for a guy like that.
Yeah, it's a dream come true for a guy that's sitting out on the street without a job.
Yeah.
You know? And I remember thinking that during the playoffs, like the year that I was out, thinking, oh, maybe a linebacker
maybe somebody will call,
hurt.
Yeah.
It's not like I wanted somebody to get hurt, but it would have been nice.
You know,
it would have been nice to just get a call,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's dark.
John, 95% or 96%, what was the exact stat that you...
Well, it was 95.5, Jake.
95.5.
Round up.
95.5% Russell Wilson was of the offense. Is that sustainable? Can they rely on him to keep doing that in order to win and stay alive in advance?
I don't know. I mean, as great as Russell Wilson is, I don't know if you want to try to win three more games playing that way. Again, I don't think you're going to get a huge rushing game necessarily out of these guys, but you need to have a little more balance. The Eagles really are, a good run team, and, B, committed to stopping it. So they kind of opened the door for the Seahawks to throw on them like they did, and then Russell did a great job making things happen with his legs as well. Look, if Russell Wilson gets hot, I think they can beat anybody all the way through this playoff run, but they would certainly prefer to balance it out at least a little bit.
95% isn't something that you plan for.
No.
In a game. It's just something that happens because of circumstances in the game.
Can you imagine if 95.5% was exactly something you planned for? They're drawing Russ, you're going to be accountable for 95.5%.
The rest of you,
4.5%.
Yeah.
Just don't tell them that before the game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Do you think Dwayne Brown's playing this weekend?
Boy, I don't know. It's tough to say it's not a huge injury, but the guy still had knee surgery less than 3 weeks ago, and he's a 300-and-some-pound offensive lineman. So that seems like a tough challenge, but Pete Carroll left the door open to it when he talked to the media yesterday. Didn't practice yesterday. We'll have to wait and see. I'd be stunned if we get any definitive word on Friday before they leave. It's probably going to be one of those
game day. Until
we see the inactives and see what they do.
Is it scary to look at DK Metcalf's potential like 2-3 years out from now?
Man, he could be so good. I mean, he's really good right now. But, yeah, when you look at a guy who kind of the knock on him was that he was raw coming in. He didn't have a ton of production in college. He didn't run a lot of different various routes. He was kind of a go-ball guy. And, look, I think I might have said this before the season even started where – look, if he's limited, if his limited skill set is he's good at the deep ball and he's really, really fast, that's a pretty good way to be limited. And he's shown he's a lot more than that, but that's still a big part of his game. Yeah, I mean, as he continues to develop, when you look at the numbers he put up as a rookie and what he's doing and that he has a work ethic to back it up, he has the right attitude, the trust in Russell Wilson. I mean, yeah, I think he's going to be special for a long time.
If you can get LeBron James to notice you and tweet about you, you're in pretty good shape.
That's good company to be in.
What do you call him, Young King or something?
Is it like Young Prince or Young King? I don't know.
He called him Young King.
Young King?
Yeah. Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
Which is basically a prince when you think about it.
Sure, yes.
Well, how about this, though? The kid is so mature that he said after that, he's like, oh, yeah, I got to put that behind
me.
Yeah,
he's on to Green Bay, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, that kid, I read that he had ran a 4.33 40, which is unbelievable for a guy his size.
Yeah.
And then, you know, his bench reps and everything. But it's more about, I feel like it's more about his maturity and just his technique and the way he runs routes. It's not about pure, you know, physical presence on the field. It's become more about how precise he runs his routes, going up and getting that ball. I mean, receivers, young receivers, let the ball come to them. And that's what you see in college. You can get away with that. But in the NFL, you got to go up, you got to high point it, you got to attack the ball with your hands. And that's what he did on that last play. I feel like his maturity is almost surpassed his physical prowess on the field.
Exactly. I mean, that was he became a viral sensation because he looks pretty ridiculous with the shirt off.
Yeah.
And then he runs a 4.33. But you're right. It's so much more than that. It's the way, you know, he's almost every practice, he is the last guy out there on the jugs machine catching balls. He's Russell Wilson's talked about, you know, these scouting reports he gives all his receivers, how meticulous DK is studying them, breaking them down, learning. So it's, yeah, I mean, the physical stuff is what gets him noticed, but he is much more than that.
Going off of that, how important has it been for DK and Russell to have that immediate connection and bond to put DK in this position where he is now? Because it's been a unique thing. I mean, 8 seasons now for Russell Wilson. I don't know if we've ever seen Russell take on this kind of ownership, like, hey, I'm going to take this young guy under my wing, and I want him to be great and champion a guy like that throughout the entire offseason.
And it started literally the day he was drafted. I remember DK Metcalf being surprised that Russell Wilson called him up right after the, you know, talked to John Schneider, Pete Carroll, does all the arrangements, figuring out how he's going to get out here, and then, boom, he gets a call from Russell Wilson. They worked out together in L.A. even before Russell brought everybody down, just because they were both in L.A. So, yeah, you're right. It started from the beginning, and I think that's where that trust in Russell Wilson saw the things we just talked about. Okay, this guy is really committed. He's a hard worker. He's smart. He's going to learn the offense quickly. That, yeah, it's not easy at that position for a rookie to come in and be a big part of the offense right away, and he's done that.
What do you think is the most difficult part about going to Lambeau Field? Besides, I don't think it's supposed to be, like, exceedingly cold this weekend.
Yeah. It's, you know, you hate to, you think professional athletes, like, the mystique shouldn't get you, but there's probably a little bit of human element of, like, you walk in there and just all the history and everything about that. But more than anything, if you've been there, the way they built it with all the renovation they did, it's just really loud because it's that fully contained. It's not a dome stadium,
it's not open like it used to be.
But yeah, there's no open end. There's no, you know, so the sound, there's a, you know, 80 whatever thousand people in there. The sound is right on top of you. So it's, and really, I mean, obviously great fans, some of the best in football and sports, period. So they're loud. They know when to be loud. So it's just, it's a tough environment now. And then you mentioned the weather. Even, I mean, we say it's not going to be bad. It's still probably going to be 25 degrees.
It's going to be cold, but so maybe it won't be as historic.
No, it won't be, you know, the negative 6 degrees or whatever. But it's cold enough that a team that's been in that environment more tends to have a little advantage over one that's in a more moderate climate.
But this team doesn't, I was going to say, this team doesn't get intimidated anyway by being on the road.
No, I think, yeah, if any version of the Seahawks is, look, I know their history in that building is bad, but if any version of the Seahawks is got a really good shot to go win, it's this one. I mean, they are as battle tested as they come. They, if anything, they've been a much better team on the road this year, so they're not going to let that get to them.
Last question is just the kind of work that they've been doing here to maybe prepare for that cold weather.
I mean, there's only so much you can do, but I mean, if you were came out to the end of their practice yesterday in that indoor facility, they had all the doors open, so it
which
was,
is already freezing.
Yeah, that building, it's
like being
for people who've never been, it's a giant ice box. It's colder. It's a cooler.
I hate it.
Yeah, it's colder in that building than outside all the time. And then they open all the doors, get the air flowing through. Yeah. So that's really all you can do. And it's more about just kind of mentally blocking it out and not letting it affect the way you perform.
Thanks for dropping by, John.
Of course.
Thanks,
happy
John.
To do it.
John Boyle of Seahawks.com. Up next, we're going to hear from, God, my French is bad, Matt LaFleur.
LaFleur? Yeah, no, you're doing a great job.
LaFleur.
Jacques Lebleu.
LaFleur. All right, well, we're going to hear from him next. Head coach of the Green Bay Packers, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
And we're back here on The Huddle. We're going to catch up with Luke Wilson at 1 o'clock. That should be pretty fun. We're going to hear from DK Metcalf coming up in about 12 minutes or so. But right now, here's Matt LaFleur, the head coach of the Green Bay Packers.
Well, hey, kind of the way you guys ended the regular season and heading into the playoffs, what kind of lift did that give to you, winning the game in Minnesota and all that, and getting the bye, and how that's going to help you for this prepare for this game?
Yeah, I think it just allowed our guys to, you know, take a deep breath, kind of decompress from how long that season is, and then get their minds right for a really tough battle this week. And I also think it allowed our guys a chance to kind of get some of their legs back a little bit and, you know, get their bodies right, because we know it's going to be a really physical football game.
What stood out to you about Seattle's win on Sunday and the way they got 7 sacks and all of that, which was a season high for them?
Yeah, just how physical of a game it was. It's, you know, it's playoff football. It's going to be tight. The games are going to be close, typically, and you know, every play is so important, and you could see it in that game. And I thought Seattle had a great plan and went out there and executed it.
What kind of year has Jimmy Graham had for you?
You know, I think there's a lot of good things that he's done this year for us. And, you know, his numbers don't always reflect how important he is to us in terms of how we've been spreading the ball around. But he is a big part of what we do.
Matt, being this is your first year as a head coach, does being in your first playoff game in that role feel any different, seem any different? Do you have to take on different responsibilities this week?
No, it's only different if you make it different. I mean, obviously we know what's at stake, but I think you got to trust what's gotten you here, and you try to keep it as routine as possible. And obviously the intensity level will be amped up, I think, on Sunday night. But in terms of our preparation and how we go about our business, it is business as usual.
Matt, the Packers have been a pretty pass-heavy team in the past. How much did you want to emphasize the run a little bit more this year, and how has it worked out for you guys?
You know, I think there's at times it's been really good for us. It helps you stay a little more balanced in terms of not being quite as predictable. But, you know, every game is its own journey, I guess. And there's been some games where the run game's really – we've won – from it, and there's been other games where it hasn't been as successful. And I know this, you know, going into this game versus such a stout front, these guys are going to play an 8-man box. They're very, very physical and do a great job of stopping the run, so it's going to be a great challenge for us this week.
Matt, what have you seen out of DK Metcalf? Obviously he's, you know, been special. He had that big playoff debut, but really doing it for the Seahawks as a receiver all year. Just what kind of challenge does he pose for your pass coverage?
Well, he's so big and physical. I don't think there's anything he can't do. He can run every route. He's really fast. I was really impressed with him when I got a chance to sit down with him at the combine. And he's gone out there and done it. And just for what he's done as a rookie, I think it's been pretty impressive. I think he's going to be one of those true elite receivers, a true number one in the game, and I think he's got a really bright future.
Did you take your shirt off for your combine meeting with DK, like Pete Carroll?
No, there was no – that would have been an ugly sight.
What and you guys kind of made a defensive makeover a little bit in the offseason as well, and it seems like that really paid off with your pass rush and things like that. I guess just in general, from start to finish, just how do you feel about how your defense, and especially the new guys that you added this year, what kind of change that made for you?
I think it made a huge change, not only from a production standpoint on the field, when you're talking about Zadarius, Preston, Adrian, but also from a leadership standpoint. Those are three of our best leaders on this football team, and have really done a great job of bringing everybody along with them.
And Aaron Rodgers as well, just I guess his season, how you sort of thought about that. I know there's always so much discussion about quarterbacks and how they've played and stuff like that, but how you feel like his season was in total?
Yeah, you know, I think he's played pretty darn well all season long, and I know there's been times where we haven't had the offensive production, and obviously that typically the quarterbacks get too much blame for that, and a lot of times they get too much credit when you're doing really well. So it's kind of a give and take thing. I think he understands that. That's just the nature of the position. But ultimately, and we always stress it around here, it takes all 11 to get the job done. And, you know, it hasn't always been that way. You know, we've had some inconsistencies, and it just like most teams, it only takes one guy not to do their job to the best of their ability, and you know, the results can suffer from it.
Matt, the Seahawks and the Packers have somewhat of a heated rivalry the past several years. Have you gotten a sense of that or heard any stories from some of the more veteran guys in the last couple weeks?
You know, no, I think it's been more made up from just hearing it from some people in the media, but I don't get that sense from our guys. We know how important this game is for us, and just like it is for them, and because it's the loser's going home. But again, we're going to approach it like any other game that we have all season long.
All right, Coach, thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Y'all take care.
That's Matt LaFleur, Green Bay Packers head coach. It's interesting. He was asked there about the rivalry, the quote-unquote rivalry between the Seahawks and the Packers over the past couple of years. And he says that's something that's kind of made up on the part of the media because he doesn't sense it from his players. Ask Aaron Rodgers about it. Ask Aaron Rodgers about coming up here a couple of times and just having terrible experiences, right? Three times. The Fail Mary, the 2014 NFC Championship, and then I think it was a Thursday night game last year where they were up here. Was it last year? Maybe two years ago.
Last year.
Where Seattle ended up winning like 27-24.
Maybe it was 2017. No, it wasn't.
Huh?
Because Jimmy Graham was a Packer.
That?
I was thinking out loud. Go ahead, Tom.
Okay. But it was another horrible experience for both Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. Trust me, it may not matter to the rest of the guys on that team, but it matters to Aaron Rodgers. And that is a legitimate rivalry between those two teams by now.
I think so.
Out-of-division rivalry.
The amount of times that they face each other. I mean, they face each other eight times. Eight times in eight seasons since Russell Wilson. So I think that is a fun rivalry that both Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, they all gear up for and enjoy.
Outside the division, is that a better one than Carolina, you think?
Between the Packers?
That's a great question.
Carolina has been pretty good, but outside of the division, probably it's a...
You know what it is? Seahawks Carolina had the reputation for a while. It doesn't anymore, but had the reputation for being low-scoring contests each time, and it was just grinding it out. The Packers and Seahawks would always have weird things happen.
It's true. I would say probably the Packers over Carolina, especially, you know, since the last 2 years, Carolina has really kind of imploded and has fallen apart.
Especially the two quarterbacks going, and now Russell is up to the level legitimately, and if not past, the level of A-Rod.
Yeah,
right?
and really, I think this
I
is
just called him A-Rod.
You say A-Rod?
Aaron Rodgers.
Dave, you can see yourself out.
Terrible.
That's something that Dave is not going to let go for the rest of the day.
Nope.
Dang it.
I'm going to grind over that one.
Yeah. That's okay.
I think this is a game we talk about competitively. I think this is a matchup where Russell Wilson can go out there and prove that he has passed Aaron Rodgers. And also Aaron wanting to say, hey, I'm still the best in this league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so from a competitive side of it, that definitely is there.
But, you know, not winning since 99, I categorize that as a fun fact.
It is a fun fact because I don't know how important
different.
It is.
Every team's different. And they didn't have Aaron Rodgers back then. When Aaron coming in 07, I think
it was
draft.
08 is when he took over.
And when he took over was a year or two later. But, I just kind of like, But I think it's on a lot of players' bucket list. Would you say that, Jake? I think for me, I got to play in the Milwaukee Municipal Stadium because they used to split the games.
Yeah. It's so crazy.
In 88, we played in the baseball stadium and we were on the same sideline. Because of the way the
field
worked
set
out.
Up. That's really weird.
Isn't that weird? Yeah, there was like an empty spot between, I think, the 45s.
Imagine being the two guys that had to stand on the ends of the two teams and just be like, all right, I'm just going to
look at each other.
Okay. I can tell you, as a linebacker, having to look and get the calls, it was a long ways away because they come to the, about the 30 is where it is. So, and that was weird. But going to Green Bay my first year in Denver, that was pretty cool, man. I remember Brett Favre. The game ended with two sacks of John Elway by Reggie White.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember running a blitz and – falling down, and I remember looking at Brett Favre's shoe, and I was like, my hands were underneath my body, and I'm like, if I could just grab that shoe. He took off and ran for a touchdown. But I remember so much about that game because it was a big deal, man. Green Bay is a big deal going into that place. And
it was a big deal even going to the municipal stadium?
No, not that
okay.
one.
Okay, Lambeau.
But yeah, because I was disappointed because I was like, I wanted to play in Lambeau.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway. Yeah, I think it's – but I don't see it like taking – it's not some entity that's going to take over and beat the Seahawks or anything. You know, it's just every year is different. But it does have that mystique a little bit more than probably anywhere else. I mean, where else are you going to go and be like, wow, this is really cool playing in the stadium? Pittsburgh?
Jacksonville.
Buffalo, Jacksonville? Yeah. I mean, come on.
Coming up next, we're going to hear from DK Metcalf as he met with the press yesterday. That's next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Back here on The Huddle, we're going to catch up with Luke Wilson coming up at 1 o'clock. But right now, we're going to take a listen to DK Metcalf, this big star of the moment. He met with the press yesterday.
Do you expect them to try to give you any extra attention Sunday, given the game you just had at all?
No, sir. Because you know, if they're going to do that, then Tyler and Demo is going to have a breakout game.
What's your reaction been like? Family, friends, social media?
I mean, it's been great. You know, a lot of attention, but time to focus in on Green Bay.
Do you like seeing LeBron tweet it to you, though? Or?
I mean, yeah. It was cool, but like I said, it's time to focus in. Can't harp on that just one moment.
Is that a life highlight for you?
No, it's not a lot. No, not a life highlight.
Have you received any kind of advice or tips from any veterans about a playoff game or anybody says anything to you about that?
No, not really. Just treat every game like it's a championship opportunity. Treat every game like it's the same. But right now it's either win or go home.
You made that switch, it seems like, almost immediately after the game, like focusing on Green Bay and everything. Kind of where does that kind of focus come from?
Pretty much Russ, Coach Carroll, you know. You know, they've been in big-time games, big-time moments, so, you know, they know what to expect. So, you know, just trying to mock them and, you know, just get in that same mindset as them.
You talked about the miracle after what happened to you in college. Did you have people telling you last year at Ole Miss you weren't going to play football again, that injury was too serious?
Yes, sir. The first doctor when I was in the hospital told me that. And
you saw the second thing?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. From Dr. Foley, who's done the surgery plenty of times, and he told me I was going to be fine.
What was your reaction to the first doctor coming
back? Heartbreaking. I cried. Because, you know, football is taken away from you at that moment. But, you know, the second opinion told me otherwise.
How many weeks was that between opinions?
One week. Yeah, sir.
Longest week of your life,
after. I mean, no, I was just going to focus on getting my degree and, you know, finishing school.
How did that injury happen exactly?
Kickoff return. Yeah.
You throw in a block?
Yes, sir.
How much does that increase your appreciation for all that you have right now?
I mean, it shows me to not to take anything for granted. Not a moment, not even a practice for granted. Just go out there and give it all I got.
Obviously, you're unhappy, or maybe not unhappy, but you were hoping to be drafted earlier than you were. But full season later, just how perfect did things work out? That's where you end up in playoffs.
All right. I mean, it was a perfect situation for me. At the moment, I was mad, but you know, after everything said and done, looking back at it, just happy that I landed here. Great quarterback, great offense, great team, organization, and we're in the playoffs, still playing while a lot of teams are at home. So you know, it was a great moment.
Quarterback was in a very similar situation when he was drafted as well. Did he have any words of wisdom for you right away throughout the year of like, hey, it doesn't matter, you know, when you were taken,
right.
We can do this together and become what now is laid out to a great season for you,
right.
Still moving forward?
Yeah, you know, there was a lot of knocks on him coming out, and, you know, you've seen what he's been molded to right now. So, I mean, just never count anybody out because you can't measure somebody's heart, basically.
Did he call you that, man?
Is that
right?
Yes, sir, he did.
What did he say to you?
Just ready to get back to work, and he was excited that they drafted me.
He's pointed to the offseason work you guys did down in L.A. It's kind of when you first got to know you and the work ethic and all those things. Just, did you get a sense right away that you guys could form something pretty special?
I got a sense when he first called me after I got drafted because, you know, I wasn't expecting that. And, you know, the starting quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks just called my phone, Russell Wilson. I mean, I was starstruck. But, you know, I had to come to two, like, all right, I'm ready to work. I'm ready to, you know, show the world what I'm about.
How do you think that's paying off now, this morning, and the work you did in the summer?
I mean, it's paid off pretty well, just, you know, by how far I've come now. But, you know, just got to continue to keep working and continue to doing, you know, what got me here.
How much does Russ, his way about him, kind of set the tone, you know, the way you approach things, the team approaches things for Tony Green Bay, turn the page, move right. on, you know, look back, that's, you know, on to the next one kind of thing.
I mean, he's a focused individual. You know, he wants to make sure we're all on the same page. So, you know, come Sunday, you know, we're one team, and, you know, we know our job and, you know, our responsibility of what we need to do to win the game.
You always been like that as well, or have you learned a lot of that from him this year?
I mean, I've always been like that, but, you know, it's always something I can learn more of, and, you know, the focus and his study habits, I mean, I kind of picked up from him.
What stands out to you about the secondary and Kevin King?
Kevin, I know he's a big corner. You know, they're going to challenge us at the line. They play a lot of man, and they're pretty much experienced on the back end. The D line is pretty good, so I mean, it's going to be a good matchup for us.
So, just over a year ago, DK Metcalf was unable to walk, unable to talk. He was told he may not play football again. And here he is doing his thing. Boy, the value of a second opinion, huh?
Yeah, I told you kind of a little story about that, Tom. My shoulder a few years ago, I was told by one dog, I can't fix that. And then I went to Dr. Ed here, who's the team physician, Cal Fay, and he's like, oh, yeah, I can fix that. And I'm like, really? The other guy told me he can't fix it at all. Now my shoulder's better than ever. But, I mean, it's just so different. This guy told him that he would never play football again. And then he goes to this guy, and he says, yeah, I can fix you up. No problem. You'll be fine. It's unbelievable. So, that's why you should go get a second opinion.
I mean, if a doctor doesn't think he can do a procedure to fix you, is he obligated to tell you, you know what, I can't do this, but somebody else might be able to do it?
They might have had that conversation. We don't know, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. But you're right, Tom. I mean, it's just so – the variance there is, you know, so far. I mean, this guy's playing high-level professional football. You told him he couldn't play any kind of football.
Well, and even if you hear it and it ends up not being true, you're obviously playing football, had one of the best rookie seasons in Seahawks history. Just hearing that would stay with you, right? I mean, he mentioned it in the post-game locker room after the win over the Eagles in some kind of a conversation referencing it. And someone had to say, wait, what do you mean when you say, you know, your obstacles or those moments? And he said, I broke my neck when I was in college.
Yeah. And I mean, he's got a very clear picture of him after post-surgery and in the hospital bed. And it's a pretty, you know, gruesome, severe picture that it's like, man, this guy has overcome a lot. And so when you think about all that, just of the makeup of who DK Metcalf is, we know of his personality, but you think about why this young man came in humbled and hungry and wanting to learn and wanting to be great. Was not just because he fell in the draft and he thought that he should have been a first-round pick, but because of this obstacle that he had to overcome. And you talk about Marshawn Lynch and his gratitude of coming back after being out of football. I mean, DK was told he could never play again.
Right.
And he is, you know, definitely taking advantage of every moment and enjoying every moment and being grateful for every moment that he has.
Did you guys hear the montage that Jess put together?
It was so – we had a text on our text line hours after the Danny and Gallant saying, hey, where can we find that?
I got choked up listening to that, him crying on the phone and knowing that backstory. But what a great kid. It just – you look at over the last 2 years, also I think both of these drafts have been – really good, solid people. I mean, you guys have talked to a lot of these guys, and that's become, I think after 17, they talked about getting back to getting, you know, good, solid personalities and stable guys. And it's just, you know, we talked to KJ Wright the other day, and he said, it's just, there's no drama in here at all in this locker room. Everybody's supporting each other. There's no any little individual things going on like there has been in the past. And
I wondered if Marshawn noticed that difference when he came back.
Yeah.
It would be fascinating to hear his perception.
Well,
we never will. So when Boyle was in here, I asked him, I said, have you gotten a chance to talk to Marshawn? Because that was something I wanted to ask him, but, you know, it's
Marshawn.
He doesn't like to sit down and really speak with the media. Yeah. All right, coming up next, we're going to speak with Luke Wilson, tight end for the Seattle Seahawks. That's next on The Huddle.